One thing I've learned after all these years, you're gonna save yourself a whole lot of tears. Don't try to figure out who was wrong and who was right. Got to move along, baby. Let's ride. You got to roll with the punches. Yeah, you got to go with the flow.
Houlihan, welcome back to Hibernian Radio. We're coming at you from the Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, 10614 Southwestern Avenue, as we are every Wednesday night. Come on down and join us. Brought to you by Local 150, Sheehy Funeral Home, Cork and Kerry, Fox's Pizza, Flood Brothers, and Guinness. Guinness is good for you. I'm having a Guinness right now, as a matter of fact. We got a great night tonight. Everybody's in the Christmas spirit. I want to remind everybody, got a big party Saturday night. If you're at home listening to the show right now, you're supposed to be over here, okay? You can listen to the show on the podcast on Sunday, but Saturday night is our fourth annual Hibernian Hooligan Ball. We got the Larkin and Moran brothers. We got Jimmy Clunan, Katie Grennan. We have the pipes and drums of the Chicago Garda Police Band. It's just going to be a great, great night. We're raffling off a lot of Paddy's Irish Whiskey and Paddy's Swag and stuff, so hope everybody can join us. But tonight, we've got a great guest with us, and one of the things I want to remind everybody is this show is dedicated to Irish first responders because we believe that they epitomize the modern-day equivalent of our ancient Irish mythological warriors, our police, our firefighters, our paramedics, our nurses, especially them nurses. So tonight we welcome Tinley Park Sergeant Keith Sullivan. Keith, welcome to the show, pal.
Thanks for having me.
My absolute pleasure. So you started out at St. Nicholas of Tallentine Parish, then you went to St. Lawrence. You're a Viking. Your dad was 399?
Yeah, local 399 engineer.
God bless him. Probably knows Brian Hickey, right?
He does. Also, yeah. He was a member of the Shannon Rovers
Irish Bagpipe Band. Oh, yeah, he was in the Shannon Rovers. Wow. Is your dad still with us?
No, he passed away in March.
God rest his soul. Just last March, huh?
Yep.
How old was he?
75 years old.
Wow. Tomorrow's my 73rd birthday. I'm scared now. And your mom was a bookkeeper and a homemaker. So how many people in your family?
Well, yeah, me, my wife Natalie, my daughters Caitlin and Kelly.
Yeah,
so small family.
What about where you grew up? Did you have brothers and sisters?
No brothers and sisters, only child.
No kidding.
Yep.
Oh. Well, usually the only child is like the wunderkind.
Not in this case.
Well, tell us, the first thing you did was you got interested in airplanes, right?
Yeah, growing up as a child, always living near Midway Airport, I was always interested in aviation.
Yeah.
So as a kid, I'd ride my bike over Midway Airport, stop at the White Castles, grab a slider and sit out there and watch airplanes come and go.
That's pretty cool.
I got involved with the Civil Air Patrol, which is the Air Force Auxiliary, because I found out that they take you on, you could go flying with them.
Wow.
So I got involved with that. And then throughout growing up, I wanted to...
How old were you when you were doing the Civil Air Patrol?
Is
that a lot of binoculars and stuff like that?
Like 7th, 8th grade.
Oh, okay.
Going like freshman year high school.
Yeah.
Air Force auxiliary, so you get to go stand at Air Force bases.
Cool.
Flying like C-130s, KC-135 refueling aircraft.
Wow.
And obviously, you go flying in their Cessna airplanes, and you get some flight hours logged in.
Yeah.
Which kind of led in that path that wanted to go down the aviation route.
Yeah.
But then, unfortunately, in the military, you have to have 20/20 vision, and I do not.
Oh, yeah.
And nor do I have the grades for that.
Oh, yeah.
So I really didn't apply myself. So my other thing I like to do, you know, besides the aviation, was I was pretty good with my hands.
Yeah.
So I grew up in our household, pretty much every relative was into trades. So you had your choice of the different trades, and that's kind of where you're kind of getting steered to. So I decided to go in aviation maintenance as a mechanic.
No, I just got to stop because my son just sent me a very important note that I should ask you Because you're into all that stuff. It said, do aliens exist?
It depends.
What's your opinion, Mr. Sky Sergeant?
I would say, based on the recent evidence, probably yes.
No kidding. Yeah.
But I don't know. We'll see. I have declassified it.
I know there's something going on. Yeah.
There's definitely some. I mean, we had the lights over Tinley Park. That's actually been documented, so, and they can't figure out what that was.
Oh, no kidding. They come over Tinley a lot? Yeah.
Not a lot, but it was documented in UFO Hunters. They had a special on it.
Oh, did they really? Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, working at night, saw the lights, but not really sure what I saw.
Yeah.
It was like a diamond formation. That was about it. So.
Did you call it in? What the heck?
Oh, no.
Is it? No.
I don't want to be one of those guys.
You don't want to get labeled. Hey, he's nuts.
Right, right.
But that was a good question, Patty Houlihan. So you were a jet engine mechanic kind of a guy, right?
So basically what happened was I went to end up going to trade school. American Airlines Maintenance Academy was based on Archer and Laramie right by Midway Airport. And went through the trade school, got certified through the FAA as an airframe and power plant mechanic. So basically an overall aircraft mechanic and avionics technician.
Wow.
So that's what
I would imagine that's pretty good dough. It's a skill.
It is a good dough, but back in the 90s, the industry was kind of taking a downward spiral.
Oh, yeah.
So I was already working at the airport for Monarch Air Service, which is owned by Matt Lynch, owned Monarch Air Service. So I was already working over there as a refueler, and I got tapped on as a contractor to work on like Learjets and Gulfstreams.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
But the economy and the aviation industry was kind of going downward.
Yeah.
So every time you talk to a mechanic, you kind of hear that golden line in school. There's a lot of jobs out there waiting for you when you get out of school.
Yeah.
There wasn't.
No.
And with the big aviation companies like your Southwest Airlines, your American Transair, United, and so on and so forth, they either wanted you with a lot of military experience.
Oh, yeah.
Or a lot of other real world experience. And coming out of school, you don't got it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So worked at the airport for a while. And, we didn't have internet back then.
Sure.
So you sent out all these resumes based on like catalogs, these different airlines.
Oh, wow.
And you send them out there and you get two
nothing.
Back in
yeah.
where they want you to go. You're not even making what you're making working already at the airport in the Midwest here. So I kind of stay there and then I ended up getting pulled into the railroad side, which is a completely different side of it.
Yeah.
So while at the airport, working there, kind of bummed out that, you put all these resumes out, you're not really getting called, but you're still working, making good money.
Yeah.
I met a guy, and he was a headhunter for Burlington Northern Railroad.
Oh, yeah. BNSF.
Well, right? Now the BNSF. Originally, it was the BN.
Oh, okay.
They merged.
Yeah.
So the BN at the time. Well, BNSF, Big New Santa Fe.
A friend of mine is the lobbyist for them in Austin, Texas. Yeah.
Okay, so you know exactly the railroad.
Yeah. Mighty America.
Oh, yeah. So... Yeah. I'm working at the airport, and this guy meets me, starts talking to me. I didn't realize he was a headhunter because I didn't know what that was and a recruiter. And so he approaches me, and he had an airplane there, so he knew me. He knew like I never worked on his aircraft, but he knew like my work ethic and stuff, and he asked me if I ever thought about working for a railroad. Well, I looked at him all puzzled. I'm like, I don't know nothing about trains. I didn't have a model railroad as a kid.
Yeah.
I don't know nothing about it, so... He's like, we're talking about it and the benefits and that. I'm like, I went to school to be an aircraft mechanic. I don't know anything about the railroad.
Yeah.
So he asked me to go get a manual. So I'm like, a manual?
A manual for the plane?
Yeah, he goes, go get an aircraft manual. So I think I grabbed one from like a Gulfstream 4 or a Cessna Citation, whatever it was. So I brought it there. And he opens up his bag and he brings out a manual for, it was a General Electric locomotive.
Yeah.
So we're sitting there, and I'm like looking at it, and he's comparing them.
Yeah.
What are you doing? He goes, well, open the first page. Well, I flipped it open, and it's the same thing. On the railroad side, the Federal Railroad Administration, the FRA, governs the railroad.
Uh-huh.
On the aviation side, the FAA governs the airlines.
Yeah.
So the manuals are technically almost the same when you're flipping them because they're written the same way. So he's like, all right, turn the hydraulics over on the aircraft side. So I flipped the hydraulics. He's like, now on the locomotive side, they have pneumatics. So flip the pneumatics. And like literally it was all the schematics and walking step by step. So then he asked, he goes, could you read? I said, well, yeah, I hope I could read, So he goes, all right. So he talked to me and he said, hey, listen, he goes, just apply for it and you're going to have to take like a test.
Yeah.
He goes, just take the test. You don't have to take the job, so what does it hurt, right?
He recruited you big time.
Oh, he did. Yeah. Before he knew it, I was working for the Burlington Northern.
Oh, no kidding.
As a locomotive machinist mechanic and coming in at journeyman wages, not apprentice.
Oh, good.
Because of the airport and having a federal license, I was already in the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers.
Yeah.
it just transferred me over there. So I walk in day one at the railroad, journeyman wages, not knowing really anything about locomotives. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I'm here.
Yeah.
So I started working out at Cicero. I was assigned to Chicago division.
Cicero and what?
I was actually...
Cicero, Illinois.
Cicero, Illinois. You had a Cicero yard.
Okay.
I was assigned there. Got there. Met a bunch of really good old railroad cats, we would call them. Guys have been around rails.
Railroad cats.
When they would be picking up like the coal in the yard.
Yeah.
And they assigned me with a guy, and he was going to kind of read me in and bring me up to speed on what's going on and what I need to know. So I did my own due diligence. I grabbed every manual I could think of they had there, took them home just to look over them.
Good for you.
To try to figure out like, hey, I'm going into this, you know, I worked on airplanes that fall from the sky.
Yeah.
These things stopped running on the rails, so...
How hard could it be?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of big learning curve, especially with all the new technology coming in, and then dealing with some of the older antiquated technology. So I was out there working for the railroad. I started the railroad, I believe it was about 95. It was 1995, and I started working at the railroad. And it was a job. It paid well. Benefits were really good. A lot of different characters you worked with, but I was okay with that. I worked a night shift, so a lot of weird things happen at night. And
especially in the train ride,
It's like, you know, just there's just some. The one thing I say about the railroad versus the airlines, at the railroad, when you bump your hand or your arm on railroad equipment, it really hurts. At the airlines, it's aluminum, so it hurts, but not as bad. It's just a little bit learning curve, you know. Both worked outside in both conditions, freezing cold, hard to turn wrenches and do like diagnostics and stuff, so troubleshoot.
And so, at night, right?
Working at night, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So kind of what happened was I always had, like, I loved aviation. And so I worked on my private pilot's license. I would be flying. And once I left working at the airport, I had, like, kind of a coming to Jesus moment.
Yeah.
So I was working at the airport. I got a discount on plane rental, fuel rental, landing fees.
Sure.
Were kind of, like, non-existent.
Yeah.
Well, now I leave to go to the railroad. And I got paid all that, so it's a little a little too much as a hobby, you know. Because I knew I would never be like, would go into airlines and fly. It just wasn't going to happen. Wasn't the path I was going down.
Yeah.
So I worked at the railroad. I got some great opportunities. I was sent down to Overland Park, Kansas, for training.
Oh.
They sent you across the country for training, technical school training.
Yeah.
And started liking, but then I started realizing it's really a job. It's you're punching a card, and that's it.
So a job. Yeah.
Exactly. It wasn't like fulfilling.
Yeah.
But growing up as a child, I always had a lot of good interactions with the Chicago Police Department, positive interactions.
Good.
Growing up in the city, our beat cops, Levack and Szymanski, were in our...
Oh, you remember their names?
I remember really well because they're really good guys. So when you always hear this negative like stuff against the CPD, I kind of take offense to it because growing up as a kid...
We all do.
I had like really good interactions. Like these are some solid guys that would look out for you. Now, yes, they caught us before we did anything bad, but, you know, we respected them.
Yeah, and you looked up to them.
We did.
Yeah.
You know, they're your beat cops in your neighborhood. You know who they are. They keep an eye on you. So with that type of interaction and working on the railroad side, we would have to, unfortunately, get called out as mechanics to do inspection on locomotives and trains after they would strike a vehicle or a pedestrian.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So you started meeting other police officers. Well, at some point around that, it started like, well, do I want to do a little bit something more with my life, you know?
Yeah.
And I always kind of had an interest in law enforcement, but I really never took that step. And so they always said it was like a calling.
Yeah.
And I think the calling came in the middle of the winter when I was out near Eola, which is near Aurora. We had a train breakdown out there. A locomotive broke down, and they sent a service crew. And I was one of the members out there.
Was it at night or what?
It was at night.
Wow.
It was at least 10 degrees below zero, but the wind chill was worse.
Wow.
And I'm laying on my back. With a cutting torch, and working with this old timer, Bill Blair, who he's been long passed on, a good Scottishman.
Yeah.
And we started this conversation, and it was like that moment just like kind of flipped. I'm like, do I really want to be doing this, or want to be doing something where I'm helping
freezing
people?
Freezing my arse off.
Yeah, do something a little bit different, you know.
Yeah. So I wanted to help people.
Yeah. Right, I want to help people get out there and actually do some more. Do some more. I had like a big interest. So.
What did he say? Was he?
He was really forward. He was like, listen, he's like, you got a college degree.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, I think he was 68 years old at times. Like, do you want to be doing this when you're my age? He's like, you know, you have a good work ethic. You seem like you're A-type personality. He goes, I have relatives that have been in law enforcement. He goes, I think you'd be a good fit. I said, well, I was looking into it. Yeah. But I had to wait till I was 21 to start taking the tests.
Wow, you were only like 20 then?
Yeah.
Wow.
I've been really blessed with having very good jobs right out of high school.
Okay.
I've never had like, I just been blessed with having these really good jobs and, you know, getting good experiences and opportunities that always kind of fell in my lap.
Yeah.
And we had this long talk driving back, and I mean, we were cold, you know. And
I can imagine.
I'm like, say, I'm going to start testing, you know, as soon as I, you know, hit 21, I can start taking the test. And he was really supportive. He's like, yeah, you know, start studying, doing what you got to do. So met some other, I lived in Tinley Park this time, met a couple of Tinley Park cops.
Yeah.
Just talking to them, some other suburban cops. And my dad's friend, John Doyle Sr., he was a Chicago sergeant. Talked to him.
CPD?
CPD, yeah. He actually lives in Beverly.
Oh.
I talked to him.
John Doyle? That's
John Doyle.
Yeah. We'd like to get him on the show sometime.
It's possible.
Talk him into it.
I'll see what I could do.
He's got an Irish name.
Yeah, he's Irish, all right.
Yeah.
And I, you know, started testing and then talking to suburban guys. So I knew I wanted to live in the burbs.
Yeah.
I was already out in the suburbs.
Yeah.
I like the suburbs and talk to them. And the one guy explained to me, he said, listen, he goes, you got to get out of the department, get your police academy under your belt with your certification.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's like, you know, kind of like sports. You're a free agent.
Yeah.
And then
once you're through the academy.
Right. You got that certification, a state certification. And he goes, you don't have to be loyal to, to the organization. He goes, get your academy. So that's what I did. I got on my first department was Mokena Police Department, which is south of here.
Yeah. Way south.
Way south. Yeah. South of 80. Got on there. I was only there for a short period of time. And then I got recruited to go over to Frankfort, which is even south of that.
Yeah.
And then I ended up where I wanted to be in Tinley Park.
How long did you do Frankfort and Mokena?
Combined about 5 years.
Oh, so you did put in a lot of time.
Yeah, it's about 5 years combined with those two, and then I popped over to Tinley, and that's where I've been since.
Oh, great. And now you've been a law enforcement officer for 24 years?
24 years now.
Wow.
Been a sergeant for 10 going on 11. So I've had a lot of good experiences over in Tinley Park. I was assigned to my best part of my career so far has been being assigned to the South Suburban Emergency Response Team, which is a SWAT team.
Yeah.
Did that for 14 years.
What were you doing with that? I mean, what's a break down the door?
Sniper operator, yeah. Entry guy. We were doing high-risk search warrants, hostage rescue, barricaded gunmen.
Does a lot of that happen in Tinley Park?
Not so much in Tinley Park, but our jurisdiction went from the Chicago border south to about Stager, east to Indiana, and west to, I believe, New Lenox is still on the team. So we'd pick up all the South Suburban areas.
Dirt bags.
So we'd be over there doing a lot of work and got a lot of experience. I mean, loved it. It was the best part of the job.
Yeah.
I don't miss getting called out in the middle of the night.
Sure.
But I do miss the guys in the operation.
Camaraderie.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Yeah.
So that was probably one of my highlights.
Yeah. And so you've been a sergeant for 10, 11 years now?
Going on 11, yes.
Yeah. What's your weekly, what's your day like?
Well, pretty much, obviously.
Do you work nights, midnights?
I'm a day shift guy. I do work days because I got seniority. So I do work day shift. Meet your team in the morning. We bust them out of roll call. And then you're just kind of floating on the calls and wherever they need you, you roll on the call. And, you know,
oh, because you're a sergeant, yeah.
Floating around with them. Yeah. Then you got your administrative tasks.
How many guys on that police force?
We have 72 sworn as of right now.
Okay.
So. Yeah. Some people consider like a bigger department. We're really not. We're more of a medium-sized department.
Yeah.
And we have over 60,000 residents in our town.
Yeah.
So it's a good-sized town.
Matt Walsh, your chief of police, is a good friend of ours. He's been on the show a couple of times, I think.
Matter of fact, I think he was the one that directed me over to you guys.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. And, you know, you never think, Tinley Park, but there's a lot of action there, I would think, you know. They got the mall, right?
Orland Park's got the big mall. We got the theater. The music theater.
Oh, yeah.
So we got the big music theater out there, which in the summer, you're averaging between.
Is that the World Music Theater?
It used to be called the World.
Yeah.
Now it's the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater.
Okay.
So they just changed the name.
Yeah.
But it's the same place. And we're averaging about, this year we'll probably, they're talking about having up to 60 concerts this summer.
Oh, good.
Which is a lot.
Yeah.
But we average between like about 25 to 30 concerts a year.
Yeah.
So it keeps us busy. Plus we have all our other downtown activities and stuff. So. It's a pretty busy town. We don't get the near volume of the violent crime type of stuff.
Yeah, well, you don't want
that.
But
we stay busy. We don't want that. You know? Yeah, plus, I live out there, so I don't want that.
Well, my assistant is giving me all these notes. What are the biggest challenges facing suburban police in today's environment? How's morale? Oh, we know.
I would say, like, you know, to be honest with you, we feel the effects of what's going on with our brothers in blue and sisters at CPD.
Yes.
Because absolutely. We're all kind of putting the
defund
same.
Defund the police and all that garbage, yeah.
You do hear, you know, we hear it, but where we're fortunate is our community really supports us. So even during the COVID thing and then all this and stuff.
Oh, it's different than Chicago. Yeah,
yes. Like we are, our local government's really good towards us. Mm-hmm. And our citizens actually really come on support us, which is really nice.
Yeah.
But we do feel the same problems that the city guys are handling with, like, the negative image sometimes portrayed. And
the media.
The media doesn't help.
Yeah.
And we all know it's like, you know, like you have one, you know, it's just 1% of the 1%.
Yeah.
And we're all kind of labeling it. So we do kind of feel the negativity sometimes towards us.
Yes, I'll admit, yeah.
And, but then reality is you look at our residents and they come out and support us like crazy.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is great.
Yeah. Well, cops these days, just being in uniform, people are giving them guff and everything. It's unbelievable.
Unfortunately, yeah.
What about your experience in mechanical engineering? How did that transfer over the enforcement of police, the police?
So
has it at all?
I would say the only thing that really was a benefit.
Yeah.
Well, I shouldn't say the only thing. One of the things that was a real benefit was when you're an aircraft mechanic, you had to do very thorough documentation on maintenance logs. Very thorough, and at the rail, same thing, very thorough.
Yeah.
So they had to transfer over to report writing.
Sure.
So when you have to be very detailed on something.
You're dotting the I's and crossing the T's.
It was, it was a non-issue.
Yeah.
You could just, you know, very good documentation. The other thing was, too, problem solving.
Yeah.
Problem solving. Use your brain. Come up with solutions for the problems. Thinking it through. What are your options? What are your alternatives? How to, you know, do I have to reference the manual? Do I have to reference, you know, the law book that has to reference policy or procedure, SOP manual, where to find the answer sometimes, where at the railroad and airport, same thing. Like anytime you had a problem, you consult the troubleshooting manual.
Yeah, go to the manual.
And you file the flow chart, and it's kind of no different than law enforcement on that perspective.
Yeah.
I think with both ends of it is just dealing with people.
Yeah, sure.
You know, people are, everybody's unique and individual, and just learning how to deal with different people, especially when you're dealing with on the railroad side, your own coworkers.
Yeah.
Out here, like the people that you, on the law enforcement side, the people that we're dealing with on the streets there we have to deal with. At the airport, sometimes you're dealing with people with some big money who own planes.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just a different type
pain
of
in
a,
the neck. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a pain, you know, a pompous.
Yes, exactly.
You just deal with it. So.
You're a very smart guy.
Well, some of the little stuff transferred over, see.
Here's a good question. Would you encourage your daughters to go into law enforcement?
It's funny you bring that up. So my oldest daughter right now is currently going to college. She wants to be a nurse.
Caitlin.
Yeah. She wants to be going into nursing, and hopefully that she'll progress through that and she'll be the nurse she wants to be.
Also first responders.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So she's kind of like taking that on. Like she kind of likes the upper side. Now my youngest daughter, Kelly, she likes the criminal minds type of stuff and the investigation thing, but I would not recommend her to be like a local, state, or county. I recommend going like the federal side.
Oh, yeah.
So you're more true investigator, not dealing with like being like a
violent criminals and stuff like that. Yeah.
What I
don't want to have her deal with those jerks. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of now for some reason, I don't see a lot of wacky criminals in Tinley Park, but are there? I mean,
we did have a mental health center that was there shut down.
Oh, wow. Tinley. I forgot about that. Yeah.
So we have our fair share. We do service a lot of, we call it CIT calls, crisis intervention calls for people with mental health. So
they're flipping out.
I think it's kind of everywhere. I mean, the pandemic didn't help, but I think there's a lot of people that have mental health issues that we're dealing with. We have a CIT unit.
What's CIT?
Crisis intervention team.
Okay.
And they just kind of deal with those type of calls. We have to handle it, but they're the ones that follow up on them.
Yeah. So they're experienced officers in this kind of stuff, right?
Yes, they're more specialized training. They're very patient.
Yeah.
I'm not the most patient person. I don't know if it comes with age, but they're very patient, and they can pretty much talk and de-escalate and try to get them the help that they need without having to go like into being an arrest situation.
Yeah,
which is good. You know, calm the scene, and they kind of help take it over, and they do their thing. It's
that's
nice.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, any memories that stand out?
Some funny stuff?
Or crazy stuff, whatever. You know.
All right, so Tinley, we're fortunate. We have our own car, so we don't have to pull cars.
What's that mean?
So our department gives you.
Oh, you keep the car.
Right, it's your assigned that car. Okay. No one else uses that car. Yeah. So pull a car, you got to share a car, you got to rotate a car with another person, like me and you would be sharing a car.
Yeah, that's no fun. Yeah.
So I had a, I have OCD and I'm a clean freak. So the guy I shared a car with back in my first apartment, he had a tendency to like never clean in the car. And he
was
always
a slob.
He was a total slob. He would put onion rings on the shifter of the Crown Vic. So I'd come into work and I'd have onion rings. White Castle hamburgers, you know, the smell.
Well, you used to eat those yourself when you're watching.
Right, but I'm like, man, so I'd always be throwing the stuff out, so I couldn't take it no more. It was driving me nuts. I would always say something, he would just ignore next day. I'd come in there and it would be
more.
Oh, it'd be even worse.
Yeah.
So I went to the store and I picked up a can of tuna.
Yeah.
And I knew that I was going off on a 3-day rotation to be off. I knew he wouldn't be back in for 3 days because he's on vacation. So what I did was, it was summer. I cracked that can of tuna open and I stuck it right into the driver's seat.
Oh, my God.
And I just let it bake for about 3 days.
Let it sit there? Yeah.
So he got his.
3 days?
Oh, it was god awful.
And he couldn't find out what it was.
Once he found it, he figured out, I'm like, so how does it feel, you know?
Yeah, he
got it. So that was kind of like the one thing. And then baby powder is always fun with like blue uniforms. A little bit of baby powder in the vents of the squad car. Until it's
so when
like,
they turn on the air conditioner?
Blasted, yeah. Done that before. And then, you know. We have put all the paper strings in the guy's squad car parked in our parking lot, and we got his window cracked, and we just filled it up to the top. And
wow.
Yeah, just
to drive him
just
nuts.
Stuff like that. Yeah, you know? Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that would go on years ago we'd have fun with. Now it's kind of different. Everyone's kind of sensitive, you know, so it's
sure,
kind of
–
you really can't have as much
woke.
Fun. Yeah,
much
I guess woke you know,
yeah.
really can't have much fun like that.
Yeah.
But we still have a lot of pranksters.
Yeah.
There's some guys that, you know, they'll get you. No, maybe not today, but they'll get you. One guy is always notorious.
So as a sergeant, how many guys do you have underneath you?
So assigned to my team, I have 8 guys assigned to my team.
Oh, wow.
So there's 8 of me, and I can actually honestly say this is being a sergeant for 10 years.
Yeah.
This is the best team I have ever had.
Oh, great.
Of guys working with me. Top notch.
They're listening now, of course.
Oh, no, actually, I didn't even tell them I was doing this. Oh. No, but in all honesty, I've told them before.
Yeah.
All honesty, a really good bunch of guys. They get stuff handled. They do it right.
Yeah.
I get no complaints, which is like, in this day and age, is almost unheard of.
Yeah.
And they're out there, and they work, and they go out there, they put the time, and they do what they need to do. So I'm actually blessed this year. Next year, I'm going to be going in administration, so I'll be losing that team, and plus some of those guys are breaking up. So we call it the 85 Bears.
Yeah.
It's a one shot. You know, this is a team. And
this
then
is it.
It's done, you know. One and done. So
Now
a bunch of good guys I work with. So really, really happy this year. Makes my job a lot easier.
Do you work nights too?
I work a lot of overtime, so
okay.
I'm assigned to a day shift, but I work all shifts.
Yeah.
I like overtime.
Yeah.
I like that extra money. I think I work more efficient on overtime, actually.
Efficient?
I'm more efficient.
Oh, I thought you said
more
fishing.
Efficient.
Well, that's a bit you're getting paid more. All right, looking back, so how long, much longer do you think you're going to do it? You're still a very young man. How old are you?
I'm 46 now.
Okay.
So it's between 6 and 8 years.
Okay.
6 would put both kids out of college. 8 would give me that buffer.
You got a plan. Amazing. Yeah.
6 to 8 years, and then got some other stuff. I teach at a police academy.
I'm
a firearms instructor, so I teach up there. So
where at?
It's called the South Suburban Law Enforcement Academy. It's out in Glen Ellen.
Yeah.
So I do teach out there, and then I got some other irons in the fire right now for down the road.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see where it stands. You know, we'll see where we are as a society in 6 years.
Tell me about it.
How the law enforcement is, where we are with our pension system,
and
benefits, and I'd like to go in 8, but it might be 6.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Still
enjoy it.
Do you get a lot of violence in Tinley Park? Probably not, I would think.
Not like what you see like in your more heavier urban areas.
Yeah, you don't want that.
But we've been seeing a lot more of an uptick over the last 4 years, I could say. We have had our carjackings.
Oh, yeah. In Tinley Park.
We've had our carjackings. We've had a lot of other problems that are more transient. People coming into town causing problems.
Oh, yeah.
Leaving out.
They're not from the area. Yeah,
not from the area. Domestic violence always occurs in all communities. So we do get some stuff like that.
We had a cop on the show, and he said, in a domestic, never go in the kitchen.
No, knives. A lot of knives.
Knives are laying off. Don't go in the kitchen.
Yeah, don't let them walk in there. Yeah, kick them out of the kitchen.
Yeah.
So we do get our fair share. I mean, we're a... You know, I can't really pin down one thing, but we don't get the volume.
Yeah.
So, which is good.
Well, it's a great community, Tinley Park.
I live there. I like it. Been out there since 96.
What's the parish? Is that St. Michael's out there? What's out there?
We have St. Stephen's.
Oh, that's right.
That's one of our churches. I have St. George.
Okay. Yeah.
And we got one more. I just can't think of top.
Is there a high school out there?
We have Tinley Park High School and Andrew High School.
Andrew, oh yeah, that's huge.
I think we have a total of 17 schools in our community.
Oh wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, 17 schools.
And there's only 60,000 people in the town.
Yeah, a little over 60, I would say, but 60,000, yeah.
Now, are things getting crazier during the holidays, or what's the deal? Is it?
Today was a crazy day because it's warm out.
Oh, yeah, that's
so
right.
Get a little uptick, but we have a tendency of seeing a lot of like domestic violence around the holidays. A lot of domestic violence pop around the holidays, which makes sense. Families getting together, drinking alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
Airing of the grievances.
Sure.
Get that. We do get a lot of retail theft because we have a lot of businesses.
Oh, no kidding. What about that smash and grab stuff? Is any of that going on in Tinley Park?
Yeah,
oh, really?
Our liquor store has been hit before. Our tobacco shop's been hit because we're also part of, we're in Cook County, but also in Will County.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of tobacco shops.
And you're right by all the expressways.
Correct.
Yeah.
So our auto dealerships, stuff that's going on, you're seeing, it's happening out there, just not the volume of it.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So unfortunately, it's happening.
Do you guys do, one of the things when we talk to the Chicago cops, they have a whole camera system. Do you guys have that?
Yeah, the LPR system. Is that the license plate readers?
No, it's just like video cameras everywhere. All the businesses have them and everything. And
we have a pretty good camera infrastructure.
Yeah.
But not every local, it doesn't, all the businesses don't patch into us.
Right,
those are like kind of private.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but they're working towards it, technology-wise.
Where exactly is the station?
Our station is located off 183rd Street and just east of 80th Avenue.
Okay.
So that's where our station is located.
And you live right there in Tinley Park?
I am a resident, yep.
Okay.
We had a residency, kind of like the Chicago Police Department has.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And over the last two union contracts ago, they got rid of our residency. They made a 30-mile radius.
Oh, that's good.
Which actually is better for us because we've been really successful with doing a lateral hiring list.
Yeah,
we recruited we recruited several Chicago police officers. They're out by us, and they can still, you know, make it here. They can still live in
the
city. We've been pulling a lot of suburban cops from other agencies because of our department.
The cops, they're not getting any respect in the city at all.
They can come out by us, and
we'll
welcome with open arms.
Oh, that's good.
So
because they're having a tough time of it.
They are.
And then part of that is the political structure of the
city. It's not fair. Guys and gals are out there doing what needs to be done every day and just don't have the support from the powers above.
Is there a village manager of Tinley?
Our village manager is Patrick Carr.
Oh, I know Pat Carr.
Yep, that's our village manager.
Yes. We went to, he was on the Skinny and Hooley show and we went to Ireland and we visited his cousin, Michael Carr, who is now dead, in Newry.
Okay.
And Pat Carr is married to a lovely Irish gal. Her name is Anya Malahan, right? Mm-hmm. Pat's a terrific guy. Yep. But he sent us out to see his cousin or his uncle or whatever, and we had 40 people on the trip. They brought us over to their, it was in the village of Newry, huge lunch for us and everything, just great people. Pat Carr's a terrific guy. Give him my best, please.
We'll do that, yep. He's our village manager now.
Yeah, that's terrific. Yeah, good guy, yeah. He just became village, right?
Correct, yeah. He was our assistant village manager for, I'm not sure how many years, several years.
Yeah.
And then he just got bumped up just most recently, yeah.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah, it's a good spot. Yeah. He's been around a while, you know?
Yeah, he has been around. Yep. It's got to be going back 10 years, I think, when we went
good
to
Irishman.
Ireland. Yeah, he's a great Irishman. He comes from good stock, as they say. And so do you, Keith Sullivan. Well, here's some questions from my... Why should people consider moving and settling down in Tinley Park?
I would say one of the attractions to our community, I think, is the schools.
Yes.
That you always hear is everyone talks about the schools.
Yeah.
So when, a lot of times you'll hear people tell, I moved out here for the schools. They moved out here because like it's lower crime.
It's safe.
Houses, size of the houses.
Yeah. Good bang for your buck, yeah.
It's still a blue-collar community.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice. Like there's a lot of people that are out by us that have grew up in like some of the parishes that I remember, like St. Sephorosa, the same parishes, you know, St. Christiana.
Mm-hmm.
Out there, everyone kind of migrated that way. And it's just a good community. I mean, and the community does a lot for the residents. I mean, in the summer, between the music and the plaza, the car shows, the farmer's market, the Rocktoberfest, Caribbean Block Party. I mean, there's a lot of events going on all the time in a downtown area throughout the summer. So there's always something to do. Marketing does a great job getting it out there and getting the events. And we have the music theater, which it's right down in front of your backyard, basically.
Who owns that?
Right now, it's Live Nation is the licensing out there.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah,
so
they're huge.
Live Nation. And
yeah, yeah.
So they're out there.
At one time, I was driving a limo, and I was taking the guys in the band out to Tinley Park. I can't remember the name of the band. They were all these British guys. They were very funny. But I was out there, you know, waiting for them all night and everything. And good town. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
You do like it, and you're a very intelligent guy. I can tell just by talking to you. You know,
I put on a good act.
You got your act together, Keith. So God bless you. So stay safe out there. That's the important thing,
Will
right?
Yeah.
And we're so proud of you, and thanks for coming on the show.
I appreciate the option.
Come back and see us in 6 months, and let us know.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me.
God bless you. We're gonna take a little break here on Hibernian Radio. We'll be right back after these messages from our friends.
Flood Brothers Disposal was started over 90 years ago by their grandfather. With more than 20 family members still involved with day-to-day operations, the Floods are service-oriented and believe that the right way is the only way to do something. Flood Brothers are price competitive and still offer the personal touch in an industry-trending corporate. For client-centric service without all of that corporate garbage, call Flood Brothers today for a quote on your solid waste recycling and yard waste collection services. Call Bob Flood today at 630-261-0400 or go online at floodbrothersdisposal.com. Welcome back to the Flood Brothers.
Hey everybody, this is Charlotte Houlihan. Don't touch that dial. My grandpa will be right back some more Hibernian Radio. He said something about seeing a man about a horse. Sounds like I'm actually going to get that pony after all.
Irish American News has been bringing you the news important to the Irish in Chicagoland for over 40 years. If you like mostly good news and information from all aspects of the Irish community, check out Irish American News. To advertise or subscribe, call our friend Cliff Carlson at 847-872-0700 or email him at cliff@irishamericannews.com. Irish American News, we've always been green.
On the death walk of saloons that decorate Western Avenue, only the Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, the soul of Beverly, sits right on a 50-yard line of Chicago's Southside Irish St. Patrick's Day Parade at 106th and Western. Generations of Southside Irish have quenched their thirst in the Cork, snuggling up to memories of family, faith, and fierce loyalty to friends. It's the jewel of this neighborhood where we celebrated weddings, christenings, wakes, and unforgettable victories. Proprietors Bill Guidy and Mike Fitzpatrick, now celebrating 20 years in business, welcome you home for a cold brew, to share a good story, or help you throw one hell of a party. With over 20 beers on tap and a full bar for your pleasure, this is the spot you can sink a root and get your Irish on. Cork has plenty of seating, from our private event rooms to our 300-person beer garden. Our interior space brings you back to the homeland of Ireland with our vintage photos and authentic Irish decor and Chicago memories of the good old days. So say hello to a stranger, make a new friend, fall in love, or just enjoy the company of people you forgot you knew. The Cork and Kerry continues the Southside tradition parents and grandparents brought here from the old country. Come on by the Cork and Kerry and get some. The Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, 10614 Southwestern Avenue, for private parties, just pals hanging out, or intimate cocktail rendezvous. Come on home to the south side of Chicago at the Cork and Kerry.
Chicago firefighters first formed an independent firemen's association in 1901. Firefighter delegates met in 1918 at the American Federation of Labor Convention to form the International Association of Firefighters. Chicago, having been the second organization to join the American Federation of Labor, they were designated as IAFF Local 2. Over the next 100 years or so, Local 2 has been tempered through turbulent times and survived to prosper. In 1980, a contentious strike almost split the union, but the Brotherhood of the Barrel prevailed. Today, it's a stronger union because of that, as Local 2 is forever negotiating benefits for their members. Ask any of the members and they will tell you, as the faces of our ranks change over time, the men and women of Local 2 will always stand steadfast in our resolve to aid and assist those who find themselves in dire situations. Our brotherhood is our bond, and we celebrate our differences as a way to better serve the citizens of Chicago and keep each other safe. For more info, go to IAFF2.org.
And we're back on Hibernian Media. Hey, big thanks to Keith Sullivan. That was terrific. He's got his act together, that guy. Good man. St. Lawrence Viking. You know, I want to remind everybody, tonight, right now, tonight is our fourth annual Hibernian Hooligan Ball. We got the Larkin and Moran brothers playing. We got Jimmy Clunan, the Cloonster. We have Katie Grennan, the international fiddler. I think Jimmy Clunan is bringing his brother Coleman, who we all remember from the show. And then we have the pipes and drums of the Chicago Garda Pipes and Drums Band, and they're coming. Our old pal Tommy Harrion and Bruce Quintos and all those guys are going to be here. We're going to have some fun with them. And then we have Jack Bullington, a great Irish dancer, and he's got two lovely young Irish dancing ladies. So we're going to have the three of them up there dancing and hoofing it. And then we're going to close with the Garda. But we're also going to be raffling off a lot of Paddy's Irish Whiskey. They gave me some glasses today to raffle off. Stuff for behind the bar, the caddy, all this cool stuff. And it's all part of the, you know, your admission. We get the tickets. And we probably do split the pot, too. It's going to be a great, 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 great night. And hope to see you all there. We only do it once a year. Our only fundraiser of the year. So don't miss it. Okay. Now, Billy, you know whenever I'm walking down Western Avenue, I look in the window, Ken's, Wrong's, Hart's, any of those great Irish saloons, you see the ghost of my old pal Jimmy Goff through the mist. And he says to me, "Hey, Hooley. Who died?" June Pauline Walsh, née Liston, beloved wife of Patrick Walsh, loving mother of Timothy, the late Christopher, proud grandmother of Emma and Alexandra Walsh, Delaney, Daniel, Emily, and Ethan Walsh, dear sister of David Liston and the late Annette Fitzpatrick and Mary Stapleton. Funeral is at St. Joseph's and Francis Xavier in Wilmette. I know that parish. Memorials may be made to Catholic Charities. God rest her soul. June Walsh. Wait a minute. Let me just take a second. Okay. Geraldine K. Lally, age 85. Geraldine K. Lally, wife of the late John C. Lally, devoted mother of William, Diane Wells, and John Lally. She's a great lady. Please leave a memory for the family on Geraldine's tribute wall. Your stories will bring comfort to her family. And Billy, the funeral arrangements and the wake were handled by Sheehy, where all the right people go. Okay, Mary Joyce, 93, of Chicago, formerly of Park Ridge, beloved wife of the late Michael B. Joyce, loving mother of Nancy, Dr. Michael, and Martin. Please omit flowers. They don't want any flowers. So I want to make sure everybody knows that. God rest her lovely soul, Mary F. Joyce, 93. She had a nice long run. John D. Crawford, born August 9th, 1924. That means he's 96 years old. Son of the late John and Josephine Crawford, beloved husband of Rita and the late Mary. He was raised on Congress Street, graduate of Resurrection Grammar School, Quigley High School, Loyola University, and Georgetown Law, United States Naval Reserve, 1944 to 1981. Wow. Captain in the Naval Reserve Intelligence Program. He served on the USS Melville, appointed by President Ronald Reagan as managing member of the U.S. Railroad Retirement Board. And appoint a joint request of the Association of American Railroads and National Railway Labor Conference. Remember the Knights of Columbus, Knights of the Holy Sepulchre, American Legion, U.S. Navy League, and Hangar One Foundation. God rest his soul, John D. Crawford, 96. And finally, Julie Marie Riley. How old was Julie? Oh, no, Julie unfortunately died kind of young. Beloved daughter of Roberta, Bobby, and the late Charles Riley Jr., dearest sister of Lori, and loving aunt of Joseph Searle Jr., proud friend of Bill W. God bless her. Julie entered heaven December 7th, was greeted by her dad, grandparents, and friends. We are sure there was a grand old party that day. Dry your eyes. And remember, Julie, with a smile on your face, in her honor, take in a stray cat or help somebody in need. And Billy, the wake and funeral were handled by she's, where all the right people go. Okay, we can close up the crypt. And I have a story to tell, but I think we should go to the break. Go to the break. I have a story to tell that you might find interesting and a couple of jokes. So stick around for some Hooli Town, too. And we'll be right back after these messages from our friends.
With a history going all the way back to 1896, the International Union of Operating Engineers has continued to protect workers and their families with loyalty and brotherhood. Local 150 has continued to thrive through economic booms and busts with careful training and aggressive organizing. Under the leadership of President and Business Manager Jim Sweeney, Local 150 has implemented programs and action plans to create work, protect benefits, and keep members working. And they've been helping the Irish-American community of Chicagoland for just as long. The Hibernian Radio Show is proud to be associated with Jim Sweeney and Local 150, and we salute the continuing efforts of the International Union of Operating Engineers and their support of Irish and Irish-American families now and in the future. Thanks to Local 150. When your family has suffered a loss, there's one family I know who will be there for you. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes are third-generation, family-owned and operated. The Sheehy family has dedicated their lives serving families throughout Chicago and the southwest suburbs. The Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Home was incorporated in 1913 as a storefront at 76th and Halsted in Chicago. At the time, this was one of the few standalone funeral homes of its kind and was to be the first of many to come bearing the Sheehy name. The founder, Roger Sheehy Sr., was soon joined in business by his three sons, Roger Jr., Jack, and Bob. This trademark of service is evident 98 years later, as Bob and Jim Sheehy, third generation, own and operate two locations in Orland Park and Burbank. At Sheehy's, the name on their sign outside the funeral home means something. For them, it's very important that everyone be treated as if they were family, friend, or neighbor, as they very well could be. When my brother Willie died a few years ago, the Sheehys took very good care of our family. And you know, you never forget something like that. Their entire staff cares about each and every family they serve. Every detail is handled in a professional and personal manner. On a daily basis, the directors Bill Kiley, Mike LaRock, and John Sullivan, and the rest of the staff, take great pride in their work, serving families as if they were their own. Bob Sheehy will tell you, we pride ourselves on offering the highest level of professionalism with every family we serve. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes, here for you since 1913.
Irish American News has been bringing you the news important to the Irish in Chicagoland for over 40 years. If you like mostly good news and information from all aspects of the Irish community, check out Irish American News. To advertise or subscribe, call our friend Cliff Carlson at 847-872-0700 or email him at cliff@irishamericannews.com. Irish American News, we've always been green.
Hey folks, Charlotte Houlihan here. Did you know that Hibernian Radio is now streaming worldwide on Global Irish Radio? Every Saturday night at 7 p.m. or 1 a.m. in Ireland. Yes, the Irish are always way ahead of us. Check it out at globalirishradio.com or capital GIR.IE.
Southsiders have always known where to get the best pizza on earth, Fox's Pizza. For over a half century, the Fox family has been creating that delicious thin crust za that your mouth will tell you, this can only be Fox's. It's a Chicago Beverly institution at 99th and Western, as well as in Orland Park, where they combine delicious food with an Irish pub ambiance. You got the best of both worlds. Still owned by Tom and Frank Fox, whose mom and dad, Frank and Teresa, bought the Western location from Al Capone's sister back in 1964. They opened the doors in Orland at 73 at 143rd and Ravinia Avenue. You'll recognize the stone turrets of their Irish castle, whose great times have been celebrated for generations of Chicagoland Irish.
Fox's is perfect for the whole family, pickup or delivery. Or you can dine in, relax, and have a cocktail with your dinner, whether it's steak, ribs, chicken, or especially pizza. It's all good. Having a party? Fox's also does catering. Call Fox's in Beverly at 773-239-3212 or in Orland Park at 708-349-2111. They're proud sponsors of Hibernian Radio and all Irish first responders. Mention this show for a free toothpick. Gotta love that Fox's Pizza.
Flood Brothers Disposal was started over 90 years ago by their grandfather. With more than 20 family members still involved with day-to-day operations, the Floods are service-oriented and believe that the right way is the only way to do something. Flood Brothers are price competitive and still offer the personal touch in an industry-trending corporate. For client-centric service without all of that corporate garbage, call Flood Brothers today for a quote on your solid waste, recycling, and yard waste collection services. Call Bob Flood today at 630-261-0400 or go online at floodbrothersdisposal.com. Welcome back to the Flood Brothers.
Hi, everybody. Your old friend Mike Houlihan back here with Hibernian Radio. Yeah, we're looking forward to that party Saturday night, 4th Annual Hibernian Hooligan Ball. But, you know, I don't know if you guys know this, but I was an actor in an earlier life, still acting once in a while, and had a pretty long career in New York. And an old friend, I made my Broadway debut with a guy named Tom Nardini. Now, Tom, you may remember from a film called Cat Ballou. And it was him and Jane Fonda and Lee Marvin, John Marley. It's a terrific film. Nat King Cole and Stubby Kaye are also in it. It's just a terrific film. And Nardini was a young kid, maybe 18, 17 years old, and he played an Indian guy. He used to get typecast, but he was Italian, out in L.A., and he got a contract with Universal. And this whole thing recently, I talked to Tom maybe every 6 months, or he's an old, dear friend, and he's still in New York. And we were talking about Alec Baldwin and that incident with the shooting on that film. Okay, well, Tom, back in the 60s, he was in Kenya, East Africa, acting in a film with Hugh O'Brien. For those of you who don't know who Hugh O'Brien was, he was Wyatt Earp, a TV show, a great big star back in the 60s. And they had a British crew on this shoot. The name of the show was Africa, Texas Style. And the master shot scene was to show Hugh's character's sharpshooting skills. So Tom sent me this note. He said, I stood 20 feet away, profile, with a flute in my mouth, tied with a monofilament secretly to be pulled to coordinate with the firing of Hugh's pistol. As we were about to film, actors in place, there was a commotion near the camera, and Hugh was just going nuts. He walked away from the crew safely to the side, pistol in hand, and fired it, quote, loaded with blanks, safely into a hillside. It had been loaded with birdshot. Live ammo and blanks had been stored together. My friend Tom was in shock. He said Hugh had a fit. He was usually very low-key, but he'd been in the Marine Corps in World War II, and he was beyond knowledgeable about weapons. He also played many TV cowboy roles, notably Wyatt Earp, and he understood the movie set and its many dangers. Filming stopped on the spot, and he schooled me as to weapon safety protocols right there, particularly on a movie set. In the Marine Corps, Hugh had been a drill sergeant. He insisted I load and test fire the pistol loaded with blanks. A few times in the later years, I ran into him through the years, and I would thank him for not killing me, and he would just nod with a whimsical smile. Thanks, Hugh. I am overwhelmed as I reflect on the loss and tragedy of the film Rust. My heart goes out to all of them. So that's a story where an actor was on the ball, you know, not this idiot Alec Baldwin. Oh, I didn't pull the trigger. Oh, yeah, you did. Okay. So thanks to Tom Nardini for that story. And he sent this to me. He says, if you ever need time to fill, I said, I'd be happy to tell this story because he's an old pal. What a great career. We had a lot of fun. We were on in Broadway together in a play called Solomon's Child. It premiered on Good Friday and closed on Easter Sunday. It was over very quick. But we were there. We were on Broadway. Anthony Zerbe was the star. It was about deprogramming your wacko kid. I played the state trooper. The only guy to get laughs in that film, or that play, I might add. Anyway, look him up. Tom Nardini, my old pal, great actor, and he brought up the story of Hugh O'Brien back in the 60s. Okay, now let's take a little walk down to our favorite spot, Hula Town.
Deep in the south side of Chicago.
Get me out of here.
So deep. All the way up to 93rd Street.
Get me out of here, please.
Across the tracks where they only spoke Yaki Dak.
Oh.
And the people barely survived on a strict diet of crunchy bouncer and bamboo.
Hey, man, you want another drink?
Yes.
Can I get you two?
This is almost 70 years we're talking.
70
when
years?
The what? His teeth,
oh.
Something entered his cranium.
His cranium?
And wormed around his frontal lobes and took him to a state of mind.
Mind.
Hidden place on the other side of bunkers.
Welcome.
A crazy, silly, screwy.
Have a seat.
Known as...
Hoolytown.
Hoolytown. Welcome to Hoolytown. Don't stay too long, though.
How come?
Because you might not come back. Welcome to Hoolytown.
Why, thank you.
And you're welcome.
And that, of course, is the one and only great Greg Holloman, who does that introduction to Hoolytown. He plays God in my film In Search of Weeping Jim. Old pal. Just a terrific guy. Second City guy. And I love that. I love Hoolytown. So, a couple of quick jokes. Two men are approaching each other on a sidewalk. Both are dragging their right foot as they walk. As they meet, one man looks at the other knowingly, points to his foot and says, Vietnam, 1969. The other points his thumb behind him and says, Dog do, 20 feet back, watch where you step. And Vietnam guys won't like that. Sorry, Elmo. All right. Final joke. A wealthy lawyer was riding in a limousine when he saw two women along the side of the road eating grass. Disturbed, he ordered his driver to stop and get out to investigate. He asked one woman, why are you eating grass? We don't have any money for food, the poor woman replied. We have to eat grass. Well, then you can come with me to my house and I'll feed you, the lawyer said. But, sir, I have a husband and two children with me. They're over there under that tree. Bring them along, the lawyer replied. Turning to the other poor woman, he stated, You come with us also. The second woman, in a pitiful voice, then said, But, sir, I also have a husband and six children with me. Bring them as well, the lawyer answered. They all entered the car, which was no easy test, even for a car as large as a limousine. Once underway, one of the poor fellows turned to the lawyer and said, Sir, you are too kind. Thank you for taking all of us with you. The lawyer replied, I am glad to do it. You'll really love my place. The grass is almost a foot high. Okay. See, there's cruelty sometimes in humor. I hope to see you all, every single one of you. You can win Patty's Irish Whiskey. You can win glasses, all kinds of stuff. Split the pot. Everything. And I also want to thank Patty Houlihan for... give me that question for Keith Sullivan. Do aliens exist? So Patty's wondering about that for a long time. Okay, we're heading down that road. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week. Jimmy Lynch is our guest next week. Not Elmo, but Jimmy Lynch, the filmmaker, an old friend. And he has a new film out called Ghost Rider. We'll get to talk to him. He's a terrific guy. He's a... Cook County State's Attorney, Prosecutor, and has a lot of great stories. So that's next Wednesday night, but we'll see you Saturday night at the Hooligan Ball. Don't forget to see you there. God bless you all, and we'll see you later. Bye.
Far I was from God. And I buckled up my shoes, and then I started walking.